Do we know in the Labor Department what the average cost of 401k plans is in terms of management fees? Is there some metric that you're using?
Well, actually, we don't know, because 401k plans themselves vary considerably in size, different kinds of levels of services, different kinds of features, the number of investment options they offer. So it's hard to figure out what the average cost is. What the federal law that governs these plans says is that compensation for the services that are provided under the plans have to be reasonable. So when your employer picks the vendor, the service provider, picks the options, what they're supposed to be doing is looking at whether the costs that are being charged for the service of providing these benefits is reasonable. But we don't really know what that translates into as a rule of thumb.
And so when you say reasonable, is there some guideline that defines reasonable, or is that just up to the discretion of the company doing the investing and the employer, if you will?
Well, it's basically I hate to sound like the lawyer that I am, but it's basically a facts and circumstances test. Employers have to take these things into consideration, and if the Department of Labor looks at this plan, the federal law that governs it requires all these decisions to be prudent and made in the best interest of the participants and beneficiaries. So reasonableness is basically looking at the facts and circumstances. We know, for instance, that small employers, because they have less leverage in the marketplace, often pay more for the providing benefits for their employees. And the question is how much more they pay and what they're getting for their value. That's one of the reasons that in the prior administration, and then, of course, in this administration, the department is very, very focused on making sure that not just workers have the information about what fees are being charged, but the employers, so that employers, when choosing the investment options that they want to offer to their employees, are able to understand fully what the costs are associated with those options.
And so give us a status update on the rule. Where does it stand? How far is it from being implemented, and how would it work?
Well, actually, the rules were proposed, last year, and we are taking a fresh look at these rules, but we hope to be able to finalize them and get them out for in final form perhaps early next year. Very complicated area. There are two sets of rules. As I said, one set of rules that would require information to be provided to the employers that choose these plans for their employees. And in some respects, the most important set of rules governing what individual employees have to be told about the costs and the fees associated with the choices that they have.
We're talking with Phyllis Borzi. She's Assistant Secretary of Labor, Employment Benefits Security Administration.
And so as you describe this, I envision people opening their statements at some time in the future and seeing a cost of management fee and going, what the heck is this?
Mm-hmm.
And yet they've been charged this all along, seemingly unknowingly, because it really doesn't need to show up currently on your statement, or does it?
You're right. It doesn't. Of course, some employers do require these statements to reflect these fees, but it's very spotty. It's not always required. And you know, it's interesting that you mention the statements, because I guess one of the messages I have for your audience today is how important it is for them to actually open that envelope and look at their statements. Now, they're not always going to find the fees, but they're going to find some things that might give them a clue. When they open these statements, they'll look at the balance. Did my balance go up or down? But then they need to look carefully to see whether they can figure out why. It could be because the investment performance, usually what the statement says is, or the information you get is, that the investment performance isn't very great. But as you mentioned, the cost of these fees is part and parcel of what return people get on it. And based on how expensive the fees are, the return can go down and really can significantly affect the balance that people have in retirement.
In fact, if there's zero change in the funds themselves, you could still have a negative impact on the amount in your 401k because of the fee.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you see the balance going down, but you don't often know why it's gone down. People do assume that it's investment performance, but sometimes you're absolutely right. It's just because the fees that are charged eat up any return, any investment earnings that your fund might have.
And so, Ms. Borzai, if you could just fill us in about, you know, how the industry is reacting to this, how the bigger companies that that do these large investments for firms, how are they taking the news, and have they given you feedback about the new regulation?
Well, we've actually gotten terrific feedback, and I think that both the business community and the financial services industry have been generally supportive of this. I think people do understand that there's a need for greater transparency, greater information. The pushback we've had is that it's very difficult for ordinary workers and for their employers sometimes to figure out how to make apples-to-apples comparison of the types of investments because, you know, you have mutual funds, you have insurance company products, you have bank products, and they don't always, even if they disclose information, it's not always disclosed in uniform ways that people can compare. What am I going to earn in a mutual fund? What am I going to earn in a, you know, a bank product? What am I going to earn if I choose an annuity type product or an insurance type product? And so one of the challenges we've had here at the department is to provide guidance and make these requirements easy to understand for the financial services industry, who obviously are a lot more sophisticated than many of the participants out here. But our goal is to make sure that this information is on the statement that the participants read, that it's easy to find, that it's easy to use, that it's easy to understand, because it will be in a chart in which they will have an ability, the participants will have an ability to compare these wide variety of funds that they're offered in a way that's simple and understandable. And honestly, that's the challenge. That's why it's taking us longer than we had hoped to get these regulations out.
And you're hoping
to make sure that they're useful.
And to reiterate, you're hoping to have this done by February, that the rule would be in place?
Yeah, certainly early in the year. If we can get it done faster, that would be terrific. But I think, you know, given how difficult it is, I think it probably will be after the first of the year.
And just you know, for the federal audience listening, will this also apply to the thrift savings plan?
Well, you know, our jurisdiction doesn't technically apply to the thrift savings plan, but let me just say this. The kinds of disclosure that I get as a federal employee and that many in your audience get as federal employees is actually quite good, and we used the kinds of disclosure that the thrift savings plan provides to its people, its participants, as the starting point for the kinds of guidance we're looking for here. I guess you might say that what we're trying to do is make sure that not just federal employees, but all employees have access to accurate, understandable, and useful information.